Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Hi, it's Marcia Cook, and it's A Good Story is a Good Story, and we are here, and I'm in Chicago, and I'm looking at clouds, but at least I'm on the air. I'm sorry for this week for everybody. I wanted to apologize from Virginia and myself that a lot of the shows this week we had to cancel because there was a problem with Blog Talk, but we practiced yesterday, and we got all the show, you know, we got everybody got on, and so we're hoping that everything goes away, you know, okay today, but thank you, and we're sorry, and whatever guests that you didn't hear, we will be having them on again. And I'm trying to be organized today. We'll see what happens. I haven't been on all week, but we've been crazy. But we have a great guest on today, but I just want to say a few little things. Tomorrow's show is also canceled with JD. It's Story Time for the Kids. That's a great show, but she canceled it because we were having difficulties and because we had a tough time when Fran Lewis was on the other day. And so last week we had music playing, so now Blog Talk is, everything seems to be fine. And we also want to thank Blog Talk for always featuring our shows, and we're very happy with that. And we'll bring you a lot of new shows during the year. And today I'm having one guest on, which is unusual. I know we have six or seven, but the man we're having on, we don't need more. He's got it all going on. So we're going to have a great time. And Bethany's here with us. Bethany, hello.
Hi, Marcia.
How are you?
I'm great. It's nice and sunny here today. Cold, but sunny.
Is it really sunny? Oh, all right.
We had snow they said we were going to get, so I'm happy.
Well, we have some snow, but not bad. Everybody, you know, the traffic is moving and everything is good, and we're okay. It's like 20, but it's all right. We'll deal with it. And I know that you are friends with Roger, so you want to tell us a little bit about our great guest today, which is R.J. Ellery, and he's a great British crime writer. And do you want to talk a little bit about it? Because I know that you've been keeping up with his entire career.
Oh, God, I don't think you have to say anything about this man. He has, I hope I don't miscount. He's got...
A lot. I just go like a lot.
Books. Yes. A lot of books. I have
and
like nine
good.
Of them. At me, so he has like 11. He's got a new one coming out, and he, in my opinion, is the best writer. I mean, I just love all his work. I have all but two of his books so far, and so I don't know.
He's been on with Fran a few times, and he will be on again with Fran, I think, in March. Fran is booked up for like 20 years. I really don't know. I mean, she books a lot farther on than we do. We hope that everybody lives that long as long as she has her.
Everyone knows how to off somebody. You can call this guy. He can tell you.
Yeah, and you know, so we're going to bring him on, and this is why there's one guest today, because he really has done it all, and he's really very interesting, past and present and future. So we'll talk. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
How are you? Now that we said that about you, you have to talk to me and talk about everything.
That's very kind. Thank you. Much appreciated.
Well, it's you know, it's interesting, you know, because we have a lot of writers on, but then there are certain ones that are very special and that they, you know, have been on shows and really entertaining and interesting, and you are one of them.
Thank you.
One of the questions probably people want to know from you is, what is it that you like so much about writing that keeps you writing? Because in this market, it's so hard to have an audience stay with you, because there's so many people out there writing.
From a personal perspective, I think it was Christopher Hampton who said that most writers write because they can't help it.
That's true. You're right.
I know that makes sense to you.
It does. Yes, it does.
You kind of, you know, for me, writing has always been a vocation. It's not a job. It's not even an interest. It's always been a vocation, and it's something that I just seem to get more passionate about as time goes by, as opposed to less passionate about.
Yeah,
I struggle sometimes with the sheer number of stories that I want to tell, I think.
Right. Yeah, I get that. Definitely.
And, you know, I can write and do write two or three books a year and can only publish one. So we have this ever-increasing quantity of material that just remains unpublished, which is not a frustration for me. You know, people routinely ask me, what's my favorite book of the ones that I've published? And I say, well, you know, the actual answer is my favorite book, the best book, is the one I haven't written yet.
Right.
And the one I'm most enthusiastic about is always the one that I'm doing now, is always the one that I'm writing now.
Yeah.
I mean, I start a new book 3 weeks before I finish the previous one, you know, writing-wise.
Oh, that's a good,
and
that's a good idea.
Excited.
Why do you do that?
I get excited.
Why do you do that?
You know?
What would be the reason you do that? Well, it's a good idea, and I know what you're saying. Why do you do it? Starting.
Well, I I'm in a situation where I sort of can't help it because I'm sort of so enthused about writing the next book that I have to start doing something. I have to get one page written. I have to write the first line. You know, I have to make some notes, create some characters, give them some names, you know, start researching the location where I'm going to put the book. I just get very enthused and very excited about the next project. It's always, you know, there's that old, we were talking earlier about old Chinese proverbs. The wise man is the man who knows he knows nothing. But there's also a great proverb, I don't know where it comes from, but it says the man who will live forever is the man who knows what he's doing tomorrow. And I just feel like I know what I'm going to be doing tomorrow. I'm going to be, you know, I think when I finally die, I'll die at 80-something years of age in the middle of writing a novel. I just think that that's the way it's going to be. I think that this is what I'm meant to be doing. And I just feel profoundly fortunate to be in a situation where I can do it, you know.
Now, when you go out, do you have a lot, I would assume, I see right now in America, it's very different when a lot of the Barnes & Noble, a lot of the places, they don't have as many book signings as they used to have. And when you go out, do you feel like you like to talk to the people that like your, you know, your fans? I mean, doesn't that make you feel?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, any time I'm ever asked to do any kind of a public event, I always say no. I always say yes. The only time I say no is when I've already agreed to do something else. It kind of gets crazy sometimes. You know, I just got back from Holland the day before yesterday. I've got to go back again at the beginning of February because we're releasing another book in Holland. You know, the year before last, I spent 7 months on tour.
Wow.
I did 49 cities in 11 countries, and during that 7 months, I was home for 17 days, a total of 17 days. And I did, you know, 100 and something library events the year before last. I did less last year. And people write to me and say, would you come and do such and such an event? Would you come and speak to readers in a bookstore or a library? And, you know, how much do you charge to do that? What's your fee for doing that? And I write back and say, you know, let's spend the money on promoting some books, or, you know, let's give the money to a school or to a charity or something. I'm not going to charge you
For
coming and talking
to
people about my books. I'll come and just do it because I love doing it and I want to meet readers, you know.
Let's say you were a new writer and, you know, you were kind of worried if you'd have people going there. I mean, isn't it kind of like, well, I think it's okay if you have just a few writers, a few people in the audience, because, you know, you have to start somewhere, you know. And
well, also,
sometimes
you have
don't
to look at, statistically, it's been demonstrated that the average paperback passes through 10 or 15 pairs of hands in its life. So if you go and do a book event in a little bookstore somewhere in the Bronx or somewhere in Greenwich Village or so-and-so and so-and-so, and you have 10 people turn up, essentially you have created an audience that reaches 100 to 150 people.
Right. It's like a chain letter.
Absolutely.
Because nobody ever throws
and you
a book
have
away.
To, you know, my viewpoint about book events is that you go and do them, and even if two people and a dog turn up, you should be there and make those people feel as though you came for them.
Right.
Because if you communicate at a level that they can understand and you talk about your passion for writing, if you talk about the things that you love, you know, that's kind of contagious and people get enthusiastic about it and they will give your book a chance. And if they like the book, what do? They recommend it to other people.
Right.
You know, publishing companies and marketing companies, ever since books have been printed, have been trying to work out what advertising and marketing campaign is as successful and profitable as word of mouth. And do you know what? There isn't one.
See, that's you know what? That's interesting you say that, because everybody's looking for the great marketing scheme. There is none. There isn't one. There really isn't.
There isn't one. You know, I talked to a marketing director in a company. He works for a company. He doesn't work for my publishing company, but he works for another publishing company, which is one of the largest publishing companies in the United Kingdom. And London is one of the publishing capitals of the world, no question about it. He's the heart of the English language publishing industry. And he's been a marketing director and marketing manager and in the field of marketing for books for over a quarter of a century, nearly 30 years. And he says to me, marketing a book, knowing whether or not a book is going to be successful, is actually alchemy.
Yeah.
You can't predict what's going to work. You can't predict what publicity campaign is going to affect the public. You can't do that. It's you know, he says we do the shotgun routine. We stick, you know, 10 or 20 books into a shotgun and we fire them into the sky.
And
one of them will stick, one of them will land, one of them will, you know, and it's always the one that you least expect.
See, that's right.
So
see, I always say that.
There's
I say
no
that
way
too.
That you can control that, you know?
See? Yeah, see, I always feel that way, and I try to tell people that because, you know, everybody's so busy worrying about if this one's going to like the book, if that one's going to like the book. But if you go to a movie, you know, I'm a screenwriter also, so I love movies. And so if you go to a movie and you're with, let's say, 10 people, two people will like it, five will hate it, three will not, you know, I mean, and, you know, have no opinion. So you really have to, you're just writing because you want to get the story out. I mean, I think
Absolutely.
It's important for the story. So it's interesting
Absolutely.
That you say
I mean,
that.
The best advice I could give any writer, you know, I'm often asked, and I do writers' workshops and I do creative writing classes and all this sort of thing, and I'm asked routinely, what's the best single piece of advice that you could give a writer who wanted to write a book that they hope is going to be successful, commercially and critically. And the simple truth is this. If you simply wrote the kind of book that you yourself would like to read, as opposed to the kind of book that you think other people would like to read,
right. yep.
then you've got a good chance of writing something that other people are going to enjoy. You get this phenomena.
I agree
with
that.
You get this phenomena with songwriters. And I say songwriters because I'm a musician and a songwriter myself, and I think it's something that I do have an understanding of. So, for an example, let's put this in, give you an analogy. Say you have a songwriter, and they write a bunch of songs based on their personal experience, trials and tribulations, difficulties that they run into in life, love affairs, times their heart's been broken, so and so and so and so. They write those songs, they record those songs, and the album is successful. People like them. People enjoy that material. They identify with it. The songwriter is now famous, is now a music star, so and so and so and so. And that degree of attention that comes along with that is strangely addictive.
Yeah.
People get very concerned about being popular. They get very concerned about staying in the public eye. So what they then do, the songwriter, is they start to do things and they start to write songs that they feel will be interesting to other people. They start trying to be interesting
right.
to other people in order to stay popular, in order to stay well-known, in order to stay famous. The thing that they forgot is that the actual essence of why people enjoyed their work and why people identified with the material that they wrote is that the songwriter wasn't trying to be interesting to other people. He or she was being interested in people and looking at people, listening to people, finding out about people, being curious, asking questions, you know, having that degree of humility necessary to be able to learn from anybody, even a child. You know?
I agree, write material
from that perspective of being interested in people and interested in life. And I think as a writer, it's key that that you keep your eyes and ears open, that you don't have any preconceptions about people, that you're always curious, that you're always asking questions, that you always work towards writing the kind of book that you would like to read. And I think that that is the key to writing a book that you feel that will result in other people enjoying what you create, you know?
See, I think that's right, you know, because, like, I do talk a lot, but, you know, not only on the shows, but I talk a lot in regular life. And when I go to a restaurant, I'm always talking to the servers and who's ever there, the hostess, whatever. And my husband, he's used to it by now. People, sometimes the hosts, they come down and sit and talk to us. And I really do learn a lot about life through other people. So he's getting used to that now, because I really do believe that sometimes, you know, even when I was little, I think my mother used to tell me that when I was three, I was walking in everybody's house and asking them questions. And I am that way, because I do feel you are a better writer when you know about a lot of people. If you just know
Absolutely.
About yourself, if you know about yourself, it's not working. You have to feel what other people feel, good or bad. I mean, you have to have, sometimes you have to have things in a book that are, maybe they're a little sad, but they're reality. Life,
yeah.
A lot of
and
things
I think, you know, creating interesting things, whether those interesting things be the written word, whether it be film, whether it be music, whether it
yep.
be art, whether it be photography, whether it be ballet, whatever it is, if you are interested in creating something that is interesting to others, then you have to be interested in others.
Right, yeah, I think that's true.
I think that's the key. I think that's the key.
And I do like that, you know, because I really do. I find it very interesting. I know I do get sometimes a little involved, but I really, I like to hear what they have to say about their life, because I want to know about it. And, you know,
Absolutely.
And I think that a lot
Absolutely.
Of people, they look at, they'll look at a busboy, they'll look at a server, and they don't think, they'll go like, oh, he's a busboy. But that's not true. Busboy has a life. And a lot of these busboys in the restaurant.
Well, I'll tell you something. I'll tell you a funny story. The day before yesterday, I took a cab in Amsterdam back to the airport. I was in the cab for maybe 20 minutes. I got out of the cab and I got on the plane. I realized I'd left my gloves behind in the cab in Holland. And I phoned my publisher and said, can you get a hold of the taxi company? Ask for Frankie. He lives in this district of Amsterdam. He's been a taxi driver with that company for 4 years. He's got a wife. He's got two kids. One's called so-and-so, one's called so-and-so.
Sounds like me.
And that way you can find him. Ask him whether or not I left my gloves in. And she said to me, she said, how on earth do you know all of this about this taxi driver? And I said, well, I just asked him.
I know,
you know,
right,
and
exactly.
He talked, you know, we had a nice conversation about his life and this and that and the other and financial troubles and the euro and all this
it
kind of business.
It sounds like me too, because
you know,
that's what I do. And it's true. And, you know, but and I've realized through this what a lot of people don't know is a lot of the busboys and people that help serve you, they have two and three jobs. And they go to one job, they go to the next, and they send home money to their parents. I mean, they really are good people. And people don't, they just don't, you know, they look at him and they go, oh, he's just a busboy. But that's not really true. He's a person. He's not just a busboy. It's one of the things he does. But, I mean, and I
Absolutely.
Think that you have to get into looking at people and actually really, because I do, I know what you're saying. And it's funny because when we go in a taxi, I do talk to the taxi driver. I think it's so interesting to talk to other people. You know, beside, you know, the people that I'm surrounded with. I like to know about
Absolutely.
Everybody and what
Absolutely.
They do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My first ever trip to Manhattan some years ago, I was in the airport on my own. It was about 9 o'clock in the evening. I was looking for a taxi, and this limousine driver approached me, and he said, I'll take you to where you have to go for the same cost as a yellow cab, because usually the limousines, the town cars, are a little bit more expensive. But it was the end of the day, and I think he'd had enough, and he wanted to go home. So I got in his car, and he was the world's leading authority on Frank Sinatra. He'd had dinner with Nancy Sinatra 3 or 4 times. He'd seen Frank Sinatra perform 100 times. We ended up going to O'Reilly's and had drinks together that evening. We had 3 or 4 Manhattans together, and then he drove me.
Yeah, I think it's great. Yeah, I think it's so interesting.
You know, I say to my son, you know, I have a 16-year-old son, I say, life is people. There's nothing that's more important about life than people. If you're interested in people and you care about people and you find time for people, you know, It's almost like if you expect to be happy in life and you don't spend the majority of your time trying to make other people happy, then you're a fool.
Right.
Because individual happiness comes from your efforts to make others happy, and it's contagious.
Right, and that's what makes you so successful, because you have a heart. And, you know, Bethany and I talk about this, you know, because, you know, if you're doing a project and, you know, Bethany has just started out and she's doing a great job. She's got 4 short stories, and she has more, and she's really very descriptive. You know, I as a writer, I know that's a fault of mine. I'm not as descriptive. That's why screenwriting is, you know, a good thing for me. And Bethany does great screenwriting, so, and she's very descriptive, and I remember every little thing that she writes in there because it's descriptive. Bethany, do you want to talk about, you know, any of this? Because I know that it's important to you what Roger was saying.
Well, actually, I got being descriptive from reading. I like the books that get me into the setting, and so that's what I try to do. I try to, when I'm writing, I see what I'm writing, so I try to fix it to where everybody else can see it too. They can see what I'm seeing, you know.
And they
that's
can
quite
by your
ability.
Words.
Yes, that's quite a talent to be able to do
that.
That's
what I keep telling her. It's a huge talent because a lot of people can't do that.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and so, you know, and I know when Bethany started, she was listening to all the shows. And, you know, I myself, well, we talked about a few minutes before, all the guests that I've had on, and we've done so many shows, it's that I have learned something from everybody. And that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to learn something. And, you know, and somewhere in your head, somewhere later, you'll remember what that person said. And you say, you know what, they did that, and that might help me. And the fact that you're telling people that you're going out to crowds and or not to crowds or to just to talk to people, that is what's happening. That's good. And I think a lot of people don't want to do that. And everybody is saying, you know, that's why everybody's trying to market. They keep like, oh, we're going to market this and I do that. But they're not really selling books. But they're getting their name out there.
You know, people who have reservations about doing that kind of thing, they just have to take a look at anyone who has any degree of success in any field. It doesn't matter whether they're a writer. It doesn't matter whether they're a photographer, an architect, an actor. You know, take a look at people like De Niro and Pacino. What were they doing 30 or 40 years ago? They were bussing tables.
Yeah, they were.
And they were taking bit parts and you know, non-speaking roles in off-Broadway dinner theater productions where they got paid nothing. And they were bussing tables in order to earn enough money to take, you know, acting lessons at the Lee Strasberg Academy they were doing. You know, Beckham, the footballer, you know, there's a wonderful interview that was filmed when he was about 14 or 15 years old. He's at school in England, and he's talking about being the captain of the English football team. And you can just get the idea that this kid, you know, where all the other kids were hanging around down this and that and the other trying to find a girlfriend and so, Beckham was out the back of the house kicking a football against a wall. He was out in the park until it got dark, till his dad went out there and dragged him in by his ear to do his homework. You know, a tremendous amount of what passes for talent is actually a phenomenal amount of practice.
No,
you know,
you're right.
I think, was it Hemingway who said that the art of writing, the faculty of writing is like a muscle, and one has to exercise it.
Yes.
Somebody said that. I can't remember whether it was Hemingway or
Steinbeck.
But you know,
just what you said about waiting tables, because I think I heard, I think I heard somebody give a speech. I think it was Robert De Niro was Dustin Hoffman's, I think, he waited on him. Or it was somewhere like that. They were talking about that. Was that what it was? Yeah.
Something like that.
And that's how they met. And, you know, it's really interesting. Sometimes you meet someone and you never know somewhere along the line where that's going to take you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you better not be mean to people, because then it might not work out either. You know, if you're somebody, you know, because people remember that too. You know? I mean, I just think it's so interesting to, you know, when, you know, because I do say a lot of these things, and I just sometimes I feel like I'm a broken record. But the thing is that I would, even though you may not sell a lot of books, you may have 10 people that have really thought you write good and they love your book, and that's really enough to keep you going, to make you write. And I think if you keep writing, you will get better if you really work at it. You can't just, I think a lot of people think if they don't get a bestseller right away, it's not going to work, but that's not true. I mean, and now with self-publishing, people are actually getting books out that never would have gotten out before.
2% of books published are bestsellers.
Right. You're right.
2%. Mm-hmm. You know, over 80% of published authors in the United Kingdom still have to maintain a full-time job in order to support themselves and their family. You know, if you're writing a book to make money, forget it. You know,
yes,
Molière,
right. Right, exactly.
French playwright, you know, France's the equivalent, the sort of contemporary of Shakespeare in France, Molière, the playwright. He said, you know, first we write for ourselves, then we write for our friends, lastly we write for money.
Right.
You know, if you get to a stage where you're writing for money, you're in the wrong business. Seriously.
Right, exactly. Yeah, seriously. You're right. You're absolutely right, because it isn't, you know, and it isn't always about that, you know, and that's why sometimes, you know, people go to the Academy Awards or, you know, some of the movies, you know, they put a lot of categories, and, you know, my opinion is you can't put a comedy with a drama together and expect one of them to be better than the other or whatever, because they're completely different forms of art, and, you know, and that's what happens a lot, and you know, because a lot, you can't put a heavy drama with, like, a romantic comedy. It just doesn't work for a contest, and, you know, that's why a lot of the stars, you know, really like the Academy Awards and want to go to them, but a lot of them, and some of your very, very good actors and actresses, they don't want any part of this. They just want to go on the theater and act,
yep.
And they don't care about the award.
Yes, well, you know, the only thing I can really relate to, the only thing I can really give any kind of insight into, is the whole issue of writing novels, writing short stories. And, you know, as time has gone on, and as the book industry has struggled more and more and has become more and more competitive, more and more people trying to do it, the simple truth is that you have to do whatever's necessary. You have to do whatever's required of you,
yeah,
to get your name known, to get yourself out there. And if that means getting on a bus or getting on a subway and going, you know, 35 miles in the dead of winter to speak to three people in a bookstore, I'm sorry, but it's got to be done. Because you don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. Just as you said, one of those people could have a cousin in California who knows somebody else, and that person is a film director.
Right.
And all of a sudden, your paperback, which they picked up at a bookstore, that you almost at the last moment decided not to go to, but eventually did, that winds up in the hands of somebody in California who phones you up and says, I'm really interested in optioning this for film, and so and so and so and so. And all of a sudden, you are a success. You don't know what's going to happen. You can't predict
Nobody
what's
knows.
Going to happen.
That's what's so, that's
you have
what's
no
so
control
about
over
life.
It. You just have to... You know, the idea is that the more that you promote and the more that you communicate, the more people you're going to reach. And that's the only way that it can be done. That really is the only way that it can be done. You are responsible for creating your own word of mouth. And if you don't show up and don't make the effort, you've got nobody to blame but yourself.
See,
you know.
that's really good, because we do talk about that. If you don't take your career seriously, no one else will either. I mean, this is hard, you know, but I love it. And you're right, you have to have a passion. And I do think the more you write, the more passionate you get, because I do have that issue where I have, like, when I start my stories, whatever it is, even a screenplay, when I get to page, like, 25, I'll go, like, oh, I think I can do this, okay? But you don't always know. And so sometimes, you know, you have a lot of thoughts, and I have pieces of paper, and you write these down, and, you know, somewhere along the line it does become a project. But, you know, you got to put the work in. You know, you can't just, you know, Bethany and I have had this conversation, like, a lot lately. Like, how do people, we do not understand how everybody is getting books out. Like, they'll say, oh, I did a book, like, in 2 days. I'm going, like how? I mean, like, how do you develop your character? How do you get this in 2 days and really think about what you're doing and make it a great project, even if it's a short story? I have never done short stories before, and I did this romance, Virginia Templeton, which is three short stories. I've never done a short story before, and I did like it. Bethany was the one that convinced me to do it, and she helped me a little with some of the sex scenes. I was having a little difficulty because using some of the language was harder for me, and she's great at that, and so we got this going. But I did the book, and it was not easy to do a short story. So I think people, you know, under the misconception, if somebody does a short story, they just, like, whip it out. You can't do that. It doesn't work that. You have to think about things, right? Bethany, you know, you might want to say something about the short story.
Well,
how hard
a short story is an event. It's not a lifetime. It's just an event, something that's going to happen over a few days, maybe a couple months, you know. So you have to condense this whole story into just a few pages, and it is hard. It's hard for me.
Yep.
You know, I would rather write a novel, but short stories are a great way to start, I think.
Stories are a really interesting discipline, you know. The techniques that you employ to write a short story are entirely different from the techniques that you employ to write a novel.
Yes.
There's really no similarity, just as Bethany was saying. You know, you've got to have that beginning, middle, and end literally within 6 or 8 or 10 pages.
Right.
And that's an entirely different proposition from writing a novel. You know, a short story is done and dusted within anywhere between sort of 2,000 and 20,000 words. A novel can be 120, 150,
right.
It can be a quarter of a million words, you know, and you have all that space and time to develop your characters and tell that story. I've not written a great many short stories in my career, but I have, you know, and recently I wrote a trilogy of short stories which are sort of linked because it's the same crime told from three different viewpoints, which is also being released in the United States very soon. But that was a remarkably good exercise because it really is a test of your ability to be succinct and to be direct and to get the point across in a short. You know, I remember reading On Writing by Stephen King, and I think he said something like, you know, after 10, 15, 20 years of being professionally published, the thing that he'd really learned, I'm sure this was King, he said, was how to say more with less words.
I know. It's very hard.
That is an art and a skill, you know.
Oof. It was hard. But you know what? I'm really glad. I've tried a lot of, I do poetry. I do a lot of different things, you know, children's stories, adult, you know, and screenwriter. And this was, I've had a lot of guests on that do short stories, so I really wanted to try. So Bethany did hers, and then she said, you could do this. I go, I don't know. So I did it, the first one and the second. Now, the third one, when I got to that one, I started writing it, and then I got there, and I went, oh, my God, I hate the beginning. It was like 20 pages, 8 pages I threw away. I go, okay, now the story begins right here because I couldn't, you know, I just said this is wrong. It just doesn't make it. It's really true. It's a test because you really have to get it right and letting the people know what it's about in a short amount of time. Because you're right, if you do a novel, you got 200 pages to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You have to make them like it. It's hard.
Absolutely. It's a very, very different discipline and something that a lot of people can't do, who can write novels, you know. I mean, I've written short stories and had short stories published, but I wouldn't consider myself a short story writer. I find it more difficult and more testing of my skill as a writer to write a short story than I do to write a novel.
I agree with you because I said this is it. Probably I'll do the three. I did the three stories. I loved it. I loved the series. But I think, and that's why I'm putting it in part one, part two, and three into a small, it'll be like a novella, but it's just going to be three separate parts. But I do think what will happen, I can't say never, but I think what I'll do is just write the novella, which will be maybe 125 pages off of some of my screenplays, rather than do the three shorts. It is, but I just wanted to know if I could do it, and I learned how to do it, and it is, like you're saying, it's difficult, and it's a test. But I'm always testing myself to see if I could do it, you know, and I push through it, and that's what I want other people to do. Sometimes you get to a point, which I'm sure you've been at, we've all been at, where you get to that point, you go, I don't know if I can do this, and you got to talk to yourself, and you got to say, you can do this, you can do this, and you got to do it, because it doesn't just flow all the time, and you really have to sit there and go, yes, I can tell this story, I will be able to do it, and sometimes even if you write a few pages that you don't like, you'll get rid of them later, but at least you won't stop.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing that people, you know, there was a survey, I think, in one of the major British newspapers a few years ago, and they were asking people about desirable professions, the most desirable professions, and after professional footballer came writer. And I think people have the most spectacular misconception about what it actually takes.
Right.
To sit down
yeah.
and write a book. It is a job of work, you know.
It is.
It really is a matter of, I've got to sit down and I've got to do this thing and I have to do it regardless of whether or not I feel like it. I mean, essentially you are self-employed.
Yes.
And when I get up in the morning, I have to go to work.
Now, do you stay up late at night? I know, you know, Beth and I both have this, but I have a horrible problem that I, you know, and then I do my other job work and I'm up in the morning, but I do have a problem of really trying to concentrate at 11 o'clock, then work till like 2 or 3 in the morning, and this is really not what I need to do. I need to get on a better schedule because I think it's really hard to work at night, then work in the day on other things, and then your mind, you need to sometimes, you know, have some rest time, which I need to do. But I don't a lot of times. Do you work late?
No, I work early. I mean, I start at 7:30 in the morning, work till about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. On the days that I'm here in the UK, days that I'm actually home. You know, and I find myself, I mean, for an example, I have a book being released in the United Kingdom in June, and then I have a book that's going to be released in England in June 2014, a year later. So my deadline for the book that I have to produce and release in 2014 was actually September 2013, and that was my deadline. You know, I have 9 months to write the book. And then my editor got a hold of me and said, you know, it would be an awful lot easier for me schedule-wise if you could deliver that book in the middle of January, 9 months early. So I sit down and I work out how many words do I have to write each day in order to write a book in 10 or 12 or 14 weeks, how much time I had. And it's 5,000, 6,000 words a day. So sometimes I have to sit down and write 5,000, 6,000 words in a particular day. When I really... that's the last thing in the world I want to do, or there's other things going on, or the car's broken down, or, you know, my son has to do something, or I have to take my wife somewhere because her car is broken, and so and so and so and so. Somehow, some way, I have to find the time to do the work, irrespective of whether or not I want to or feel like it. And, you know, thankfully, I'm in a situation where once I start work, I can get going and I get into, you know, a momentum, and I really thoroughly enjoy it. But if a day goes by that I haven't written 2 or 3 or 4 thousand words, I feel like it's a wasted day, you know?
See, that's right. See, that's what happens. You do feel like that sometimes. But sometimes, you know, there are things that occur that you can't do it, but at least you're writing, though. I mean, you know, you got to keep going, because once you stop, then if you stop for a few days, sometimes the story, you know, you got to go back and see what you did.
Absolutely. I mean, there was a period of time a couple of years ago where I wrote 2 books within a year and then essentially bought myself a year off. And I was going to do this and I was going to do that and I was going to do the other. So apart from the frustration, the sense of frustration ever increasing that I felt on a day-to-day basis because I wasn't working on a book, when I actually decided, okay, that's enough now, I'm going to start the next book, I started it and I kind of thought, can I still do this? You know, I'm still going to be able to do this. I actually haven't written a word for like, you know, 3 months or something like that. And, you know, it's a simple matter of, you know, I have to knuckle down and do it regardless of whether or not I like it.
Okay, now let me ask you a quick. Now, this is a question that occurs all the time because this is all I hear. And it really does upset me a lot because I just think that sometimes someone gets a bad review. And then they go like, I don't think I'm going to write anymore. And I'm going like, what do you mean you're not going to write anymore? Does this? Who do you know? If the person is a reviewer, if he's not a reviewer, can they write a book? I mean, it's not an easy thing to write a book. And you've written a book and just keep going on because you can't, you know, there is a time when there may be people that don't like what you've written. But so what? I mean, how do you feel about this? This is such a problem now for people, and you have so many people out there, you know, like Fran Lewis gives a really good review, okay? She does not charge any money, and she does a fair review, and she actually reads the book. You know, she's a reading expert, and everybody gets, she gets what people mean, and that's good. But then you have people out there that don't read the book, and they give a bad review, or they're not even paying attention to who you are, what you do. They just write something down. How do you feel about this market now that's happening?
Well, industry experts have said that something in the region of 30 to 40% of all reviews on the internet, irrespective of the product, are written by editors, agents, publicists, publishers, friends, family, manufacturers, marketing directors, 30 to 40%. You know, we have a situation in the UK at the moment with a particular hotel website, and it's been discovered that the vast majority, in excess of 60% of the reviews about this particular hotel's services have been written by people who are employed by the hotel. The entire system is basically broken. It doesn't work, you know.
I agree. I absolutely
agree. I was personally in a situation, which was all over the news back in September of 2012, where one review of each of my books, so so a total of 10 reviews. For 10 books, one review per book was on Amazon. Some of those reviews, approximately half of them, I had written myself, and half of them had been written by a family member. It was a misguided attempt at self-promotion, approached with the same sort of attitude of, oh, well, what the hell, everybody does it, this and that and the other. It was isolated. It was identified. It was brought into the public domain, so to speak.
Right, yeah.
And I didn't see any other route and didn't want to take any other route aside from just acknowledging the fact that I was responsible for all of those reviews, positive and negative, because I wrote a couple of negative reviews of other books by other people, which I really shouldn't have done, and that was a bit stupid. But then even smart people do really stupid things sometimes.
We all do, right, right. Nobody's perfect here in this world, right.
So I wrote two negative reviews, one of one book and one of another book, and then there were, at the time in September, there were 10 reviews, one for each of my books, which were positive, some of which had been written by me, some of which had been written by a family member who I won't name.
Right.
And for us, it was kind of like a goofy tradition that started back in 2003 when the first book was published. Hell, let's just post a review on Amazon. Let's say the book's wonderful. Let's tell people it's the best thing since sliced bread. Let's see if we can't get somebody interested in it, somebody talking about it. Let's just do this. And it kind of became a goofy tradition. And
see, because I basically, when I heard that about you, and I've heard you interviewed, and I know all about you, I really thought that is what you did. Personally, because knowing your personality through listening to you, I really thought you did it for like a joke. And I thought
it was kind of it was kind of dumb, and it was kind of like, oh, well, so what? You know, there were 1,500 reviews.
Just something to see what happened.
There were 1,500 or 2,000 reviews on across Amazon, across the entire Amazon network, and we were responsible for 12 of them. And it's kind of like the way it was picked up on, the way it was promoted, and the way it was, I had created dozens of identities and written hundreds of reviews, and which was completely exaggerated. It was completely untrue. Anyway, that's kind of beside the point.
But you're really a good writer, though. Okay, so you're a really good writer. So, I mean, you know, you just did it, okay? And so, I mean, what about the people that are just doing it just to do it? I mean, you have good books. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You are an author, okay? You know, and it's kind of sometimes you do things that you go, oh, well, I did it. You know, you can't, you know, in life everything is under such scrutiny now. It's horrible. You know, I'm surprised anybody does anything these days because they watch everything waiting to find something bad, you know, rather than good, which they ought to
Absolutely.
Look for the good things. You know, so I'm wondering, you know, like, all these people here, though, that they have, like, a lot of reviews. So do you think it hurts people or it helps them or the stats go up or the ranking is every day they're going on it? I mean, I don't know if this is part of the writing that anybody really wanted.
I don't think that, I don't, you know, it's almost like, you know, if I want to read a book, say, for an example, I want to read a book or watch a film, and I've been interested in that book or film, and I think I'm going to go look at Amazon. I go on Amazon, and if I'm already favorably inclined towards the book or the film,
mm-hmm.
I tend to only read the positive reviews.
Right.
If
right.
I'm already negatively inclined towards the book or the film, I tend to read the negative reviews. So it's almost like we're looking, you know that
right.
old saying, you only ever ask people's advice to confirm what you've already decided.
Yeah, that could be, yes.
It's almost like that with reviews on the internet. You kind of like, if you're favorably inclined towards something, you tend to have just a kind of like nonchalant and dismissive attitude towards the negative comments, and you say, oh, well, that's just a negative person, and you give
right.
the book or the film a chance. However, if you've already decided that you don't like the book or don't like the film for whatever reason, because you saw the actor in a previous film or you didn't like the author's previous book or something, 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 and you approach it with a sort of previously determined negative attitude, then you tend to read the negative reviews because you want something to agree with your own preconception. So I don't know. I honestly don't know whether or not those reviews significantly influence people one way or the other. I personally haven't seen any significant effect as a result of the negative publicity that came my way. It has been said that there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Right.
I don't know whether or not it's had a negative effect or not. I just feel that I'm in a situation where I perhaps did something that I shouldn't have done. I recognize that I shouldn't have done it. I accept responsibility for having done it. I made a public apology. I made an apology to both of the authors that I wrote a negative review about, and I only ever wrote two negative reviews of anybody that I knew. And why I did that, you know, we're not going to get into that particular thing.
Well, because, you know, when people do things like this, it's just not, you know, those things, you know, honestly, see, that's one of the things. It's just something something that happens, and you just have to overlook it and move on. And, you know, that's one of the things that people have to do if they see something negative, just move on. It's only a review, you know, and I mean, there's
lots
of movies.
You know, and the thing that surprised me, the thing that really surprised me about the whole issue was the degree to which people got on their high horse about it. I mean, I received, I think, a total of 5 death threats.
Oh, my God, really? Wow.
Yeah. And dozens and dozens of very, very, very nasty, very nasty, and very, very negative emails. I mean, dozens of them. With
the
most indescribable language.
Yeah, that's really sad that they have the, well, let's put it this way, to have the time to be able to sit there and write that to somebody is ridiculous. I mean, you know, you acknowledge that you've made a mistake. You know, nobody's perfect. See, that's the thing. I think that people have to realize that this is life and not everybody is perfect. And sometimes we do things that somebody might not like, but it's just part of life. And we just, you know, and sometimes we do something, but most time people are recognized for a lot of things that they do wrong when they do a lot of things right. So I think, you know, you have to just look at a writer. I mean, all we are writers, okay? And, you know, I think people have to realize that these are books. We're writers. There's people that write screenplays. There's movie actors. We're just people like everybody else, and we're not perfect. So I think that,
sometimes,
you know,
by you
admitting this and saying this, I think that makes you such a big person by doing this, because a lot of people would not have done what you, you know, they would have not, you know, said something that they did something wrong. But I think there's nothing wrong with saying that you can't do something or you did something wrong. It's certainly better than just saying everything you do is perfect, because that's not true. It's not a real world.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And, I mean, I'm not proud, and I'm not, you know, I don't hold myself up as any kind of a
no, you don't. You're very,
you
no,
know,
you
a moral opinion leader or a moral, you know, I don't, you know, I'm a human being, and I did something dumb, and I made a mistake, and okay, you know, my responsibility is to my readers, my responsibility is to the people who enjoy my books.
And you follow that too, because you're a good writer.
And my responsibility now is to continue to work as hard as I can, to write the best book that I can, and to be straight with people. And, you know, the only thing that really hangs back, the sort of shadow cast as a result of that whole issue, is that there's obviously a great number of people who think I'm a particular type of person, and I'm not that type of person. But you know, there's that wonderful line from The Big Country, I think it's Gregory Peck, where he says, you know, I'm actually not responsible for the way people feel about me. I'm only responsible for the way I feel about myself.
Right. You know, I think that is true, though. I think, you know, I think that everybody does expect a lot out of people. We're all human, and we do make mistakes, and this is writing, okay? And, you know, and I think people get carried away. I mean, they're doing, you know, whenever, you know, in America, whenever somebody does something that somebody doesn't like, it's all over the news. It's ridiculous already. It's getting to be where they just take the negative and just push it out there, trying to ruin someone's career, which is ridiculous, you know. I mean, this is not like anybody's gone out and murdered anybody or hurt anybody. This is, so I think people have to take some of these things with a grain of salt, and just the new writers out there, just continue to write and don't pay attention. You know, everybody's gotten a review that's not so good, and everybody's gotten good reviews or not good reviews, but it shouldn't stop anybody from writing, because the next book could be a bestseller, could be not, but it's there's always something that you can do to keep going on with your writing instead of stopping by a bad review. It shouldn't.
And if you listen to interviews with people who really are at the very pinnacle of their career, actors and writers and musicians, you know, you do find 9 times out of 10 that they do say, I did get to a point where I just stopped reading the reviews.
Right. I can
because
see
there was no point.
I can
there was
see
no
that.
Point.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Because, you know, because you go out and do what you do. So certainly somebody acting or whatever, they go out, what they do, what they do. And as writers, we write the best we can, you know, and
absolutely,
we try for the best. And, you know, that's why I think that people, you know, if you're hearing someone like you that is very successful, you know, admitting that there are things that you've done that, so what, okay? But it's, you know, all of this is part of life. And you are an excellent
writing a review for one of my books was by no means the worst thing that I've done in my life.
No, it was not. I've done
an awful lot worse than that, believe me.
Right. You know, and so, like, you know, and some of the people that sit there, you know, God knows what they've done. You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, you know. And, you know, I think all of this is just part of life. And I think you just have to take a lot of these things with a grain of salt. That's why I'm so glad these shows are out there, because you can hear from a very successful writer like yourself who goes through the same problems that everybody goes through that's writing.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, anybody
absolutely
that wants to admit the truth says it's tough, you know, and but
yep,
you love it. See, and
yep,
you're more passionate about it, which is good for your readers, because that will give you a quality product because you're putting everything you have in it.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that a published author was unpublished yesterday.
Right, exactly.
You know, the difference between being an unpublished author and a published author is a phone call or a meeting or a discussion or an agent getting your book into the hands of a particular editor who enjoys that type of writing. You know, the simple truth is that, you know, there's a wonderful, wonderful quote from Benjamin Disraeli, who was the Prime Minister of Great Britain under Queen Victoria back in the 1800s. And he said, success is entirely dependent upon constancy of purpose.
Yeah.
You know, Richard Bach, the guy who wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull, I think it was he who said, you know, professional writers are simply amateurs who didn't quit.
Yep,
you know, look at the amount of times that Jonathan Livingston Seagull was turned down. Look at the amount of times that Gone with the Wind was turned down.
Right.
I think that was turned down by 21 different publishers.
I can tell by listening to you and talking to you, I can see that I am positive that anybody that comes to hear you speak, I mean, would absolutely be just drawn to you. Because, you know, you're just open and honest. Bethany, wouldn't you agree on this? I mean, it's like, it's so nice to hear, you know, that someone like you will come out and just say all this, because I think that this is what people need to hear, you know.
Well,
I do these
writing workshops, you know, and people come with all these preconceptions and fixed ideas about how difficult it is. And the thing I say to them is, I say, look, you know, without you, publishers and literary agents would be unemployed.
Exactly.
You know,
that's a good way to look at it. You're absolutely right.
The idea.
You're right.
Yep. They come with
the
ideas.
And the same with the screen. Because, you know, it's hard even to write something bad. You know, it just takes a lot of work for somebody. And, you know, there's probably merit in a lot of the things that people, you know, sometimes when they go to a movie or they read a book, you need a beginning, middle, and end. You can't look at a book, and I think people expect, like, in 10 minutes, everything is supposed to be there. And if it's not, they go, like, what do you mean it's that? But you have to read the beginning, the middle, and the end, and then you get the story to make
absolutely
it well-rounded.
I mean, people come with these preconceptions that agents and publishers are looking for reasons to reject your book. It's actually the opposite. They're looking for region. You know, every single editor and every single agent in the world, in the literary industry, in the publishing industry, is looking for the next Harry Potter, is looking for the next.
Are.
They are looking for that book.
They
you know,
are.
And your
they
book
are
may very well be that book.
Exactly. Yes.
You know,
right.
the simple truth is that they are not looking for reasons. You know, I have a wonderful editor, one of the bright and shining stars of the British publishing industry. And I asked him a question one time, which I think is really helpful to a lot of writers. I wanted to know, as a professional editor in a major, internationally successful and profitable publishing firm, responsible for putting out some of the most successful books that have been published in the last 5 or 10 years, both in England and across the Atlantic in America, what are you looking for as an editor when you sit down with a manuscript in front of you from a previously unpublished author? I said, when a assistant or a deputy editor brings you a book from an agent or brings you a book from the slush pile and says, this is interesting, have a look at this, what are you looking for? What do you want to read? And he said something that I think was really, smart, really intelligent, and actually really helpful. He said this: I am looking for an author who does one thing really well, whether it be the plot, whether it be the narrative drive, whether it be the dialogue, whether it be the characterization, whether it be the descriptive prose. I am looking for an author who can do one thing really, really well. Everything else I can fix. Everything else I can work with them until they improve.
Right. Yeah.
I am just looking for one thing that they do really well. So my advice to an aspiring author who's hoping to be published is, number one, write the kind of book that you would like to read. Secondly, recognize your strengths and play on them.
Right.
Because that strength will be recognized by somebody else, and that's one of the reasons that your book will be picked up. You know, we go through editorial phases. We go through editorial suggestions and recommendations. We go through copy editors. We go through line editors. We go through this. We go through that. There's not one book that's ever been written and submitted to a publisher that was published just as the writer wrote it.
Right,
they
exactly.
all
okay.
need work.
That's
you know?
That's
and we go back to that old thing, you know. You know, one of the difficulties with self-publishing is that there's no editorial input. And so we're not only talking about the typographical errors that get missed, we're also talking about the plot lines that kind of peter out in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, that particular scene that could have been really powerful and emotive and really could have been the fulcrum of the book.
Well, I'll tell you,
was just not played on enough. Do you know
we're
what I mean?
Trying to do this now. World of Ink Network and Michigan Avenue, Media Avenue, my company with Virginia, both of us, we're trying to do something like that because I'm going to tell you why. This is really important because if when you do self-publishing and you don't get a good editor, you're in big trouble. But if you get an editor that's good, okay, it's going to cost you a lot of money. However, if you go to somebody beforehand who knows what they're doing to start when you – if they'll read your story and tell you where you need to fix things, and then when you go to that editor, it'll take him less time because you've already done some of the work for him. So Fran Lewis –
And who should you ask? Who should you ask for help?
Well, Fran Lewis –
Who should
Lewis,
you ask
now,
for advice?
Fran Lewis is now going to offer something like that, and because I think she's one of the best people to look at a story and tell you what's wrong with it, what's right with it, and she's a reading expert, so she's going to be offering that, and I really, she's done that for screenplays, like when you're looking for a synopsis, sometimes when you write a screenplay, you are looking to see exactly, because you only have like two sentences to try to describe what you're trying to prove, you know, what you're trying to show, and she gets it, and she finds it. So I think with books, it would help people. She's not going to do the grammar. She's not going to edit it. But what she's going to do for a service is she's going to read the book and say, you know what, you've repeated this too many times. The plot needs to change here. She is an expert on that. And I think that would make the self-publishing industry feel like it's getting to be like the regular industry with the six big publishers or whatever. You're going to come out with a good book rather than a book that just goes on and needs to be cut. And she knows how to do that, but she's not the editor. So I think if people take the time, if they write a book, they need to have some people look it over. And if they're self-publishing, they have to pay for these things because they need to get it right. And they need to put themselves out there in the regular publishing industry and say, yes, my book is good. But it can't be that way if you don't have editing.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And right. if you are in a situation where you are writing a book and you want somebody's viewpoint, somebody's response, somebody's feedback, you know, generally speaking, people ask their husband or their wife or this and that and the other. Usually they're the worst people in the world
exactly.
to ask.
Exactly.
Because they're
going
to be too kind
You're
for
right.
a starter. The person that you should pick is the person who's never without a book.
That's a good idea. See? Right. Well, that would
be
Fran.
That reader.
Could be Fran because she's reading
yeah,
20 books at a time.
When I finish a book, even now, when I finish a book, I print off a copy, I stick it in the mail to my brother. Why? Because he's never without a book. He reads voraciously. He also doesn't particularly like crime.
Okay. That's good. Right.
So if I can get him,
right.
if I can glue him to the page... and he doesn't read crime, then I know I'm doing okay.
Well, that's right. You know, you're absolutely right about that because this is the first time I've ever done an erotic romance book. However, I have friends and or people that actually I saw it on my site that people who have not read this type of book are saying that they like it because it's not all sex. It's about a story. And I think that people have to open up their minds sometimes to read something out of their comfort zone to realize it might be good.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
which
those
is why
are the
book
people,
groups are
right.
so good.
Those
That's
are
why
the
reading
critics.
Groups are so good because
yes.
they force you out of your comfort zone.
Yes, I like to go out of my comfort zone. We all know that. I really do. All right, before the show ends, I want everybody to really know. Do you want to say, you know, where your books can be found and your new titles, so you know they can know a little bit about you?
Well, obviously 10, soon to be 11, available in the United Kingdom, which obviously you can get through Amazon UK Amazon.com and the American outlets. The fifth one is due to be published, I think, in April, called Candlemoth. So there's four available now from Overlook in the United States as original US publications. Fifth one due in April. But they're on the internet. They're on eBay.
Now, what about the short story that you've written? Will that be here?
The short story. There's a trilogy of short stories called 3 Days in Chicagoland. And that is only available as a digital. It's an e-book.
Okay.
And it's in three parts, and each part is going to be like a dollar each or something. And I think that's going to be released imminently on Amazon.com. And you buy the first one, buy the second one, buy the third one. I think with the third one, you get a bunch of chapters from the next book, and it sort of, you know, gives you a taste of what's to come in the new book. But the three short stories together make up about 100 and something pages, so it's sort of like a novella in three
stories. That's what I'm
doing.
That's right, exactly what I'm doing. And it'll be like $1.99. It's cheaper than if you get all, you know, because I'm making it into one part. I have all three books, but now I'm going to make it into one book where they can get the one, two, and three parts.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
I think it's a great idea. You know, novellas are good because that's really where sometimes screenplays come from, novellas, because in Hollywood they sometimes don't want to read like 400 pages.
Absolutely.
You're lucky if you
well,
can get
three,
them to read
3 10.
Days,
3 Days in Chicagoland trilogy. That I just
is that what it is? Okay,
released, and they're already discussing. It's already up for film option, so we'll see what happens with that.
See, that's right, and see because it's a novella, probably too. They like that.
Yeah.
See, that's
yeah,
what.
Yeah.
See, that's what. Right. I think that's a great
Very
idea.
Easy
I got
to visualize as a film.
Yeah.
Very easy
yeah.
to visualize as a film.
I'm so happy that you came on, and I'm so happy that you talked about this, because this is something that people really need to hear from somebody that's very successful, who's just like everybody else. We're authors, we're writers, you know, and we all have the same problem. So when you start writing, from the day you start writing until the day, like you say, like you're 80 or 90, you're still going to be doing this.
Absolutely.
You know,
we're all crazy in our own special way.
And I thank you so much for coming on. And if you want, we'll probably, Bethany, I want you to just mention your books and mine. And then the next show we're having, let's see, Fran, you can look on Blog Talk Radio. There's no show Saturday, but Virginia has a show Monday, I think, and I have a show Tuesday. And we'll be continuing having shows, and we're going to have some special shows. So, you know, if you just want to check with any of us, if you want to go to World of Ink, network.com, you'll find out where all our shows are, and we are having some really unique people, you know, doing some people that have been successful with YouTubes and things like that, and it's going to be really fun shows. And Bethany, you want to, before we close off, do you want to say?
I have the four stories with Rebel Ink Press, and they're everywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can find out anything about me on bethanycross.blogspot.com and at our blogspot, Authors Talk Romance, blogspot.com.
Right,
that's
a new one. That's a new one for us, right, about the romance, for the romance writers. Right, and if you are a romance writer and you'd like to be on our blog and come in any of the shows, because we have a lot of romance shows, just go into the World of Ink or go into Michigan Avenue Media, and then you can find... you can email me, or you can go to Bethany Cross, and we'll get you on, you know, the shows, and, you know, we'll put you on the blog. And I think it's a good thing, because we're trying to promote authors of romance without being in the market of maybe millions. We're just going to, you know, it'll be a little easier for people to go in and find maybe 100 or 200 people rather than look through thousands. Right? Did I forget anything? That's it.
And let's see, Fran has a show, what, the 31st?
Yes,
at 4, yeah.
And if you want to, if you're interested in having Fran review your book, not as a reviewer, as a book before it gets into be a book, if it's just in manuscript form, and if you want to reach Fran, you can reach her through World of Ink also. But it's really good to have somebody like her look at something and say, you know, tell you before you go to an editor. So it will cost you less money at the editor because it'll be less work for them to do. And, you know, and I think I really think it's a good idea to do that. You know, I think it'll solve a lot of problems for certainly self-published authors. You know, so I think that's it. All right. So thank you very much. And thank you, Blog Talk, for the show went on. We're doing fine, and that's it. All right. Have a great weekend, everybody. Roger, thank you so much again. I appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Bye.
Until next time.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.